Music Radio 77.com.
This is WMCA, your conversation station. I'm Bert Knapp. Stay tuned now for the Barry Gray Show next.
I tell you, I'm saying good afternoon, and I'm splitting. You think I'm going to sit around here? You're crazy. Because the invective and the insults are going to fly. Barry Gray and my guests today are reading from left to right, Jack Spector. He does the weekend sock hop on WCBS FM. That's what it says. And Joe O'Brien, morning man at WLMA in PNA.
No,
in Peekskill.
WHUD. You blew it already. WHUD. LNA is the AM station. HUD is the FM station.
As you know, you can tell, very large operation.
50,000 watts, Barry. You only have five.
That's Harry Harrison, and that's when we're at. Harry Harrison, morning man at WCBS FM. And Dandy Dan Daniels, morning man at WYNY. And
he blew it again.
He'll put the S on my name.
No S. He blew it again, Barry.
Listen, I told you, I want to thank you all for being here, and I'll see you tomorrow with a really good guest. Be right back. Let me begin again. Start from the top.
Okay.
All right. Barry Gray, take two. Reading from left to right, Jack Spector. He has a weekend sock hop on WCBS FM. Joe O'Brien, morning man on WHUD. That's 5:30 to 10 each morning, 50,000 watts in Peekskill, third largest station in the area and first in the Hudson Valley.
The Hudson Valley, right.
First in the Hudson Valley. Apple knocker time. Harry Harrison, morning man at WCBS FM. What time are you on, sir?
5:30 to 9, Barry.
5:30 to 9.
Right.
And Dan Daniel, singular.
Right, no S.
Morning man at WNY. WYNY from 6 to 10 a.m. And you know what strikes me? You guys are all working in the morning.
Right,
that's right. Yeah.
Except Jack.
Except me. Mm. I work all the time.
Well, there is one thing we all have in common, though.
What you all have in common is talent.
Oh, well, thank you.
We are the good guys. Playing the hits. Morning and night time. Always the right time. First on your dial. Radio Smile.
Harry.
Even if you're
150,
just keep your dial at Radio Nifty.
Friends, never fear. The good guys are here on WMCA.
Hey! I didn't know we were going to do that.
How did it all come about, the good guys? Somebody tell me. I never really...
The real honest story?
Want the truth?
Okay. The real.
Out of KFWB in Los Angeles, there was a station out there, those call letters, and they were using it as a line, just as a throwaway line.
Right.
And they were represented by John Blair in those days, and so was WABC in New York, and they began to use the line too. Ruth Meyer, who was our program director...
She ought to be here.
Here, right.
Really, yeah.
She heard the line, and she said, I remember I was with her in a car one day. She said, they're doing it wrong. They're doing it wrong. Oh, I have this picture in my mind. And she just, the whole thing was, you know.
It became a marketing concept,
that, right.
Really. We were the only people who ever did anything with it. I think you might call us the first group. There were people who got together as a group before and sang and did things, but people thought of us as an individual entity. One without the other didn't work. It was the good guys, and we
were the first ones to ever wear jackets. Now everybody wears them. You know, the ABC jackets, the NBC jackets. We were the first ones. We had three sets of jackets.
Also,
on
that
red
guy
and yellow.
On
that
place we showed up, we were all dressed alike, and we just completely overwhelmed people.
But Joe and I came here essentially at the same time,
right.
Going way back. Now, each of you got on board at a different time. So how did it all become a cohesive group?
When Ruth Meyer decided that the good guys were going to be it, then she started bringing in people that fit the pattern. She already had several. I can't remember the exact sequence. I think
I came from Peoria.
You came from Peoria.
That's
you
right.
Came from
Chicago.
Chicago. And
I
you came
from Houston
Minneapolis.
Via Minneapolis. I came from Minneapolis, yes.
I remember doing news at night when Barry Gray was on the air. And I found that interesting. He used to call me, I think, Harry Hennessy.
That's right.
Right?
That's
remember
right.
that?
Hennessy, right.
There was a Harry Hennessy.
It was three-star final.
And I said, can't he get my name right? You know, of course, I didn't talk to him. You know, I was in the newsroom watching go by. And it was exciting, though, coming from Chicago and Peoria and seeing all the great people and that Barry would interview.
Was Muni on then?
Yeah, Scott was on the air then.
Scott used to do the news, and Scott used to always say, President Eisenhower got back from abroad. You remember?
And he was right.
Yeah, he was right.
Always. He said, and then he finishes saying, well, if that doesn't get them to take me off the news, nothing will.
Right.
But they never did.
But I did news for about, a year, and I did a Sunday show, and then we started to put everything together, and then... Right. It was Joe in the morning and myself and Dan and Jack. And,
it was Jack and then myself. When I first came, I was doing news on Barry's show at night and then doing the all-night show. And then when Ruth decided with a good guy concept,
right.
it started like around Christmas time in 62.
Right.
And then B. Mitch Reed, Einstein, he's going to be with us on the phone from California.
B. Mitch Reed
later.
Will be on the phone if they can get him into right. a booth.
Right. February 63.
He generally levitates about 800 feet. To get him into a booth, he'll be on the phone. But how many good guys were there in total?
Seven. All together.
Well, really, six.
And one honorary.
Yeah, one honorary.
Well,
Sunday
well, are you
seven.
Counting all the guys who were ever good guys? Is that what you're counting?
Yeah. We had two separate teenage idols and two separate all-night guys, so that made seven.
That's right.
And Ed Bear was the guest good guy.
I just saw Ed Bear a couple of weeks ago.
Grand boy. How was he?
Looks 800.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene Anthony was involved.
Gene Anthony
doing
replaced
all night,
Johnny Dark,
right.
who was fired twice. The only all-night man ever fired twice at the same station.
Well, John disappeared one day.
We had a marvelous general manager at that period. The elevator door would open on 13, the door open, and the general manager would say, don't get out, you're fired. And the guy went down to the main floor, and that was it. Into oblivion.
Yes.
Oh, you remember, Harry had a great line, if the boss comes in, get his name.
Right, I was going to do that. I'm glad you did it, Joe. I wanted to wait till Barry was finished.
Now, how long did the good guys reign?
About 20 minutes.
No.
It's six years.
2 to 7 years.
It was
seven years.
Actually, when we really owned the town, it was from February of 63 to about September of 68.
That's right.
And what happened?
Well, that's a long story. And pretty boring.
Yes.
Actually, what really happened was the radio business changed, and the salesman got involved in the picture, which is always bad. If salespeople get involved in programming inevitably suffers. At least it has in my experience.
Yeah.
But also, the world was changing then, too. Don't forget, we had the 68 Chicago Convention, and we had the Vietnam War, and we had the advent of FM as a separate entity, and you had, remember the Monterey Festival, where you had all kinds of new people like Janis Joplin, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Jimi Hendrix. You had this explosion of music and no place to put it because the stations like ours, and stations, even though we played a lot more new things than ABC did, you really didn't have a place to put all this great new music. So that's what happened. A lot of that audience went away because we were always the place in town where you could hear the new stuff.
Right.
And we weren't adding it. A lot of stuff was happening very, very fast, Barry, and there's no one reason for the demise.
Why has the picture changed so much in New York in the last 2 years? You know, trying to figure it out. It has, though, let's face it.
I want to come to that in a moment. I'm talking happily with Dan Daniel, Harry Harrison, Joe O'Brien, Jack Spector, and this is a good guy reunion. I need a moment for a sponsor, and then we'll continue. My guest at 12:19 is Jack Spector, Joe O'Brien, Harry Harrison, Dan Daniel, reunion of the good guys. Jack, you started to tell me what happened in New York, in your view.
No, I'm Jack.
I'm
That's
sorry.
Joe.
I'm
you forgot already.
Out of sight, out of mind.
You mean now or then?
You said New York has changed.
Well, New York radio has changed in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
ABC is no longer number one. And TKU and BLS.
KTU. What does it mean, Jim? Nothing.
We don't work there, so forget their call.
Disco music came and went and all that sort of thing. What is it? What's the new music now? What do they call it?
I think there's still
fusion
on the fusion music.
Fusion music. You remember fusion.
Used to be
LaGuardia.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm in Never Never Land here.
Well, Dan and
see, all
Harry
while
know
all
more
this
about
was
that.
Going on, while all this was going on with the good guys, I just kept marching with John Lindsay and all that stuff.
We remember that, right?
Yeah. I remember a fella in the hall. What's it? Murray the K.
Yeah, Murray the K.
Like 100, 200. How'd that 50 get in there?
I'd like to go back to a word reunion that you used, Barry. Actually, if this were a Tuesday, we'd feel right at home because really, usually the only time, unless we were out doing a personal appearance, and we did a lot of those, the only time all four of us were ever in the same room, and I can't remember the last time, was on Tuesdays when we had
music meetings. Right.
And we had the only Democratic music meetings around whereby everybody had an equal weighted vote and the whole thing, and all the records would come in and we would vote.
And then
that doesn't happen anymore. That's decided by like one or two guys, like music directors and program directors now. But we used to vote, and we used to pick the music that was played in New York and became a hit.
And then after that, we had a press conference, remember?
We would have
kids come from all over the five boroughs in Westchester and Jersey.
You mean you played every record every Tuesday that had come in the preceding week?
We'd vote on it.
Well, there was some screening. You know, obviously, there are a lot of records that come out every week, and especially in those days, and a lot of it was pretty bad, you know, and it would be pre-screened, and really a lot of the good stuff would come in. I don't know, we might put anywhere. Some weeks we put six on, some weeks we put one on, some weeks we put 15 on.
And none some weeks.
You know, I'm enjoying CBS FM because I am playing things now that we introduced on the air.
Absolutely.
In the 60s. And Joe mentioned the press conference, a gal from Brooklyn, I don't remember, I meant to write the name down, but she sent me a letter. And she also sent me some pictures from those press conferences.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, you know.
I'm getting a lot of that stuff.
And I think that it's interesting that through the years, I think all of us, people still refer to us as good guys.
Yes.
I mean, I get mail, and I remember when you gave me a dozen roses on your Housewife Hall of
Would
Fame.
Would you believe that I get phone calls and Peekskill telling me of people you gave roses
I'm
to?
I'm sure.
I mean
it.
Not just, they don't call just for me, but they'll mention you with the roses.
We had a Belmont Day Saturday, and we had a lot of people I gave away tickets to. And it's amazing. That's all, you know, they said they enjoy the music, and we talked about the good guys, and all of us, it's a tremendous thing.
Absolutely.
And they remember every promotion that we did. You know, I won tickets with you, and Jake gave me this.
I saw you with the Beatles at Chase Stadium.
That's right.
And all that stuff,
and they, it's amazing how people will remember these days.
And we played baseball at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
And well, that was Schaefer, wasn't it?
Valentine.
There were so many promotions.
What happened to the sweatshirts?
You can still see 30,000 on any Sunday at Jones Beach.
Oh, yeah.
They're worth,
you know,
they're worth $50.
People wear, you know,
they're collector's items.
Dry off or something, whatever they're wearing with their cutoffs or wearing over their bathing suit or whatever.
I used to bring home boxes of them and say to people, what size
are
you kidding?
You're the guy that got them.
I don't have one.
Something
they
got
to be worth a fortune.
Something else we had, but not in greater numbers, the sweatshirts were the Good Guy beach towels.
That I had.
And I had squandered a few of those, and I just had two stolen off my clothesline at my beach house. Somebody wanted them. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I never saw those.
Oh, those were great.
How'd they get
Dan
passed?
Got them all.
They
That's
were
like, I never saw them.
I still have about 8 or 10
Good Guy
sweatshirts. Great.
Yeah.
Beach towels.
Some of the little ones were there. Well, we made some originally for little kids.
He's saving them for his old age.
No. You mean tomorrow?
Yeah. Use them now.
You know, Harry said something.
We gave away
$250,000.
Fella, I don't think I should. I have to remind you one at a time. I mean, it's a great compliment, but we're all talking at the same time.
Yeah. I knew it'd be this way.
Harry mentioned something very important. He said the you know, hearing from people who want to hear music that they heard with us when they were teenagers. That's the biggest demographic around now, and people are really going for that 25 to 34 demographic. And the oldies that we play were the new hits when they were teenagers. And that's why they love us.
I'm enjoying the music now because it brings back a lot of memories.
Up and Away, remember that one, fellas?
Sure,
on the Tuesday when we played
that's
that
one
Fifth
song.
Dimension? No, do you remember that that day? That was the day they were filming it. A kid was filming the music meeting, and it just so happened that day the Fifth Dimension record was put on. We all went ape, remember?
Absolutely.
We all wound up, I think we took a half an hour with that same, we all wound up singing it. Especially Dan, you went crazy.
Well, it was I know the kid. His name was Jerry Kotz. He's now a top film director for commercials and some minor features in New York, and he happened to be using that film as his master's thesis in film at NYU.
NYU,
did The Good Guys, and you've seen it 30 times on Channel 13
that's
when they
need
to build 29.
When did it start to dissolve? The Good Guy era.
68.
How did it happen?
About 68, about 1968.
And who? What happened? Who went first?
I don't know, really. I was the last.
Gary went first.
Gary Steven.
Went to
Europe.
And into the television film business in Switzerland.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, and now he said goodbye, and he said he was going to Switzerland. And
that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wish he was here today. I'd sure like to see him.
He's in
bank.
Well, he is the president of the radio division for Doubleday.
Yeah.
That's how well Gary's done.
Well, actually, the Wooerberger is the president, and Gary is
Gary's assistant.
And then
Sigmund Freud. Then Harry left.
Yeah, I went to ABC.
He went to ABC, and I went to NBC. And
that was the best-kept secret I ever saw. He said goodbye on Saturday morning, and Monday morning he went to work for ABC.
Well, listen, we have four children, you know.
That's right. Self-preservation is the first law of the radio business.
I had one day off, and I went to work at ABC.
That was enough, Harry.
Sure, that's right.
Okay.
Has not a day off since.
And then?
And then that was it. Then Dan became Morning Man. And you stayed in your side.
I stayed on base.
Steve Lubunsky came back to MCA and attempted to bring back the good guys, but that didn't work.
Those 2 years after you guys left were the two most miserable years I've ever spent in my entire life. It wasn't the same, and I didn't know how to handle it. And I stayed. I stayed for money, and I'll never do that again. You know, it was really miserable. It was a very, very sad time in my life.
No, the 62 to 68 was unbelievable. It was one of those times when everything worked. We could do no wrong, no matter what we did. Even if we picked the wrong records, it worked.
You know, I talked to a lot of people at CBS FM. I talked to a lot of people at CBS FM and said, were the good guys friends off the air as well as on? And the answer is yes. I don't know why it happened. The chemistry just happened to be right. I think it may have been an accident. I don't know, but
Jack,
it was just great.
I didn't want to break the news to you.
Tell him now.
Oh, Brian. Jack Spector, right?
Now, have you lost track of each other now?
Yeah, pretty much. We haven't lost track. I know I ask about you guys. I hope you ask about me every now and then. I don't get to see you, though. I think I've seen each of you maybe three. Well, Jack and I worked together at the country station in 74, so I haven't seen these two guys more than three times since 1968.
I see you on television all the time, doing commercials.
I have three children, as Harry said. You know, you got to keep paying the bills.
So, now, how did you find yourself, Joe, in Peekskill? How'd that happen?
When I left NBC, I already owned a place up in the country, and I decided to get out of New York.
I remember when you bought the place up in the country.
I bought it in 67.
Right, I remember during those years, and Joe would go up there, and when I heard Joe was there, I figured automatically that's great. He has his place in the country.
So we just moved up to Dutchess County, and it's gorgeous.
And what's your life like?
I have a big place. I have 18 acres, a pond, and a trout stream, and the whole jazz. And I live in the country. Come into the city a lot, but I live in the country.
I
love it.
What's your lifestyle like? What time do you go to bed at night?
About 9 or 10, depending on whether you get a nap in the afternoon.
Your afternoon nappers?
Yeah, all of our lives revolve around... when you work mornings, I think Joe and Dan will agree, you know, your whole life is how much sleep you're going to get.
Right. Yeah.
If you go to a movie, I'll tell the children, we'll go to a movie, what time does it start? 5 in the afternoon,
good.
Possibly 4, good.
Then
we'll be home, you know.
Yes.
And
none of these 9 o'clock movies.
No, you know. I mean, as Joe said, 9, 10 o'clock, that's it. And that's, you become adjusted to it. People wonder how you can do it.
I now have a 5-year-old, and my Rosemary says, son, Paul, eat your dinner. Daddy has to go to bed.
That's right.
And what time do you live in the city, Harry?
No, I live in Bergen County, in Jersey, Barry.
And what time do you have to get up to make your...
Well, I've been getting up 3, 3:30. I'm on the air earlier now at CBS FM. It's 5:30 to 9.
Everything's 5:30 early now. He's 5:30. I'm 5:30.
Well, I was. Now, as of this morning, I'm 6. So I'm grateful for the extra half hour sleep, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Is it an extra half hour?
Well, my head tells me, you know, well, if you have an extra half hour, then you can stay up an extra half hour. So I don't... I'm sure I'm
traded off. Cumulatively, how many years of broadcasting do we have here at the table?
Oh,
Dan?
Lord.
Well, I actually started Armed Forces Radio Far East, but commercially, 1955 in Houston.
So that's 25
so it's
years.
Close to 25 years. This December will be 25 years.
Harry?
1955. I started in Chicago, Illinois, and worked my way down.
I believe you, Harry.
I started in Chicago, and people said it couldn't be done and so on, but I didn't know that it couldn't be done. You know, I mean, I was a young guy. Went to school. I had rheumatic fever. People say, how did you get involved in radio? I had rheumatic fever, Barry, when I was about 16.
And you know, it helps to be sick in radio.
Oh, a bed patient, yeah. You know. And that at that time, radio became really a companion for me. A fellow in Chicago radio, an early morning man named Ernie Simon was...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Remember Ernie?
Yeah. Yes.
He used to listen to him, and he really got me through rheumatic fever. And then eventually, when I started thinking about doing something, I think the seeds were planted then because radio was great. And I said, hey, maybe I could do that. So I remember my sister and I, you know, the ad, be a disc jockey and
sure,
so on.
Sure, sure.
So she and I went downtown, Chicago, Illinois. This will be over in a few minutes, Joe. And I see O'Brien hasn't changed, right? Think of your next line, Joe. We'll be finished here. But it was one of those things where you walk in, and if you could mumble anything, you know, the woman would say, tremendous potential. Do you hear that, man?
How,
you
know, voice.
I said, I will, but I want to be a...
You sound great on, on the phone.
Yeah. So I was there about a week. I think I paid, I don't know how many hundreds of dollars, you know, but I was sitting there saying, you know, I'm young, but I'm not stupid. I don't know what's, you know, I'm not learning anything. So I just left there. That was my radio experience, and I wandered around. I did some FM work. I'm in FM radio now, and I started in Chicago there. They had an FM station in the public schools. But meanwhile, I had stopped at WJJD, it was, and who should be in the hallway but my idol, Ernie Simon.
What, wasn't he a big FM guy?
Well, Ernie unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but at that time he was doing a lot of television and radio.
I remember him.
And I walked up, you know, and explained, I want to be in radio, and he was very nice. I always remember he took a few minutes and he introduced me to somebody else, and the other fellow said, first of all, don't go to radio school. And he sent me to the FM station owned and operated by the city of Chicago, and I hung around there and just watched. Meanwhile, I was working in a supermarket, you know, in a drugstore, and this and that and the other thing. And I was filling out applications at radio stations. And I got a call to come to an audition. So I went, and happy to say, I started at WCFL, 50,000 watt station in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I
owned by the AFL-CIO.
That's right.
It's a nice beginning.
And you can imagine how I felt. I mean, I couldn't ask too many questions because I was supposed to know what I was doing. You know? What's that? Oh, a microphone. Oh, yeah. Huh? But I got through a long summer of placement, and happy to say it worked out well. And a new program director came in, and he had worked in Peoria. And I said, Peoria? And I laughed.
You got to
like
kidding.
Everybody, yeah.
That's where they make Caterpillar, and that's about all, right?
That's it. You know, so he said, you need some seasoning. You got a heck of a potential. And so on. So I took his advice and I went to Peoria and I did mornings there. I did radio and television, and I was there a few years. The old line about a big fish in a small pond and all this business. And I enjoyed Peoria. It was great. Our station was a daytime operation, and those were the days where you come in with the right people and the jingles and the contests. We were number one in the city. Interestingly, at that point in Peoria television, there was a young man who was doing weather on the CBS affiliate there. And he has done rather well. He got out of weather, and he's in news. His name is Jim Jensen. And he went to Boston. I left in about, well, to be, you know, come with Ruth and Joe and everybody here in about 1959. And he left not too long after that, went to Boston, got into news, and we certainly know what happened to
Jim. Still the best softball pitcher in the city.
You did come in 59, didn't you?
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
So it was 3 years before the good guy started.
That's right. Now, Joe and I have known each other for almost about 40
years. 40
years.
40 years.
Oh, sure.
We worked.
I'm not even that old.
Jack. Jack.
Little baby Jack.
Jack. Bubby, you're that old. Joe and I, we were the children here during the World's Fair. This Irish juvenile with the great blue eyes. I mean, he looked like a choir boy. I've never seen a better-looking kid in my whole life. And we worked here with all these dirty old men that hung around. But I never really knew how you got here. How did that
happen? I started out in a very weird fashion. Well, first I started out as an actor, and that bombed. I went to work for a thing called Teleflash. This was a wire service to give race results in bars and other places. And that's where
He's
I started.
Dirty.
Really?
Oh, yes.
He's a dirty, tall man.
Yeah, yeah.
Dirty Dan.
Yeah.
And through Teleflash, I met the chief announcer of WMCA, a guy named Bob Carter. who was a horse player.
Oh, was he a horse player?
And he heard me on Teleflash and hired me. Would you believe it?
I remember him like it was yesterday. Great voice.
Right.
Great voice. He was on the phone to his bookmaker constantly.
But while the record was playing.
Carter, you've got a spot just a moment, two on the third. Really? Never seen anything. He had it down to a fine, to hone to a fine point. The man could make a bet, do a spot, and come back and pick up the phone while the bookie was still writing, would have done a commercial.
We all know a couple of guys in town still the same way who shall remain nameless. Yeah.
and you came here.
Yeah, as a sports announcer.
And
I started as a racing announcer, and basketball, and I did football with Mel Allen, and boxing.
Sure.
I had never seen a fight in my life. Mm-hmm. Never saw. I had never been to a fight in my life.
You weren't just like
yourself. I went up to the Coliseum and did it.
If I'd have known that, I would have idolized you more than I did.
And I did the Golden Gloves with Jimmy Powers. Remember Jimmy Powers, sports editor of the news?
Sure, sure.
And you used to do that El Producto thing on television.
On Channel 5.
Eastern Parkway Arena.
As a matter of fact, I preceded him.
Broadway
Schenkel did the fights, and I did the commercials. And you, yes, right, you preceded. And Ernie Kovacs followed us.
I did the news at 11 o'clock on Channel 5, then El Producto, then Kovacs.
Sealy Mattress, Barry?
Kovacs, Sealy Mattress.
Oh,
Kovacs with the best-looking lady that you ever saw in your life. She is now Mrs. Ely Kazan, Barbara Loden.
That's right.
Barbara Loden was the, Kovacs had this gorgeous gal that would walk across the set carrying a card that say some funny thing, wearing marvelous tights, and you forget it.
Yeah, right.
And that was Barbara Loden. And she's now Mrs. Ely Kazan, who is a movie maker. And Jack, we got to pause. We're going to pause and maybe never come back, because next is the Jack Spector story.
Oh.
And I don't think the world is ready for the Jack Spector story.
Okay.
This is the Good Guy Reunion, I'm happy to say, with Dan Daniel and Harry Harrison and Joe O'Brien and Jack Spector. And we were about to come to the Spector saga when we paused for that word.
We don't have enough time, Barry. Good night, folks.
Jack, actually, we've got just enough time, about 40 seconds.
Yeah, that'll cover it. What do you want to know, Barry?
I want to know how... I know you're a New Yorker.
Right.
And how did you get into broadcasting?
The very way that Harry did. I went to one of those broadcasting schools.
You went to Peoria?
No. On 42nd Street, above the New Amsterdam Theater. What used to be called the New Amsterdam Theater.
I know the one. That lady with the red garter.
Sensational. And I was told the same thing. You have a rare voice, young man. You go far on this business. And,
I do.
And I talked like this in those days.
Yeah.
Which is my focus when I get out of the studio.
His shorts were too tight.
Have any of you seen the film Airplane?
Yes.
No.
There's a scene in Airplane. Great-looking guy playing the pilot. White-haired, marvelous,
James
Peter Graves.
Peter Graves.
And a kid comes up to the cockpit and he wants to see the cockpit, and Peter Graves looks at him and he says, "Tell me, son, have you ever seen a grown man in the nude?" I don't know why you just reminded me of that.
Now follow that, Jack.
Go
ahead, Jack.
That's my life. No, and I got into it. I had to, I went for about 7 or 8 months to this broadcast school, and I wound up in West Virginia for $48 a week. Thrilled, the most money I'd ever made in my whole life.
Yeah.
In 1955.
So,
and got married 2 days before I went into broadcasting. No honeymoon, just got a rabbi, $25, got married in the study. Everybody thought we had to. Today it would be very fashionable. And I started in West Virginia. Stayed about 2 months, went to Pittsfield, Mass, on to Albany, Providence, Chicago. And then from Chicago joined MCA in 1961, May of 61.
Huh. So what we're saying is that there's well over 100 years of broadcasting experience in this room.
Incredible. Something Jack didn't mention might be of interest to the people out there is he used to be in the Dodger farm chain. He was a baseball player.
That was going into the Korean War, right. I played part of a season and got drafted in that very first crush of that first draft movement of September 1st, 1950. I was in there, that first bunch. And that's ridiculous, being a Jewish machine gunner in Korea. That's who needs that?
Yeah.
In December of 1950.
Have you ever felt that you might have made a sports career?
Yeah, I still play ball all the time. I have never stopped. I don't know if I could hit a major league curveball. I will never find out. I think I could, but who knows?
Jack plays a doubleheader of softball every Sunday in Brooklyn. I guess every Sunday of your life, right?
Yeah, never stop.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of radio today? Today, this very instant, the kids that want to come into it today.
Oh, the opportunities are unbelievable today. Incredible, especially if you go to college.
Well, because you have so many more facilities today.
So many more stations now. Yeah. 8,
when I got into radio, there were 900 radio stations. Oh. AM and FM. FM was meaningless at that time. Today, I think there are, what, over 8,000?
8,000, sure.
8,000. Unbelievable.
New York City has 63 radio stations.
Yeah. Sure.
That's
unbelievable. And why have none of you ever involved yourself in the ownership of a station?
Well, looking back, I had
stupidity,
an opportunity.
I guess.
Yeah, we should have. I had an opportunity when I was in Peoria, going back there. I had an offer to go to St. Louis, buy a station in Illinois, or come to WMCA. And I really seriously thought about it, because in those days, you could pick up a station $100,000,
sure.
$200,000. And there was a young fellow that produced a television show that I did in Peoria, and he had some money, and I would do the programming, you get an engineer and so on. But I thought, Barry, how many opportunities do you have to come to New York?
Yeah,
sure.
That's what it boils down to. Yeah,
right. I came very close to getting a radio station with Bert Knapp. Bert and I have remained friendly. And about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, we had some money. We came within 2 days of closing on a radio station, two stations actually, AM and FM in Albany. And the backers were the Rodgers and Hammerstein estate.
Mm-hmm.
And we dealt with Billy Hammerstein and some accountant, a lawyer named Walter Kaufman. And then a show opened on a Monday night. We were supposed to close on Thursday. Bert and I were going to go up and run these two operations. We had it. It was done. And a show opened on Monday night called Rex, which closed to the tune of a...
That's Rx, which means prescription.
Whatever goods you want.
X, Jack.
And the profits from Rex are going to buy your station,
yeah,
right?
The next day we got a call. This is Richard Rogers' show. Lost $1,000,001 and played the one night, and that was it. The next day we got a call. Hey, guys, come on and let's talk. And we told the people not to come down from Albany on Thursday, and we didn't close. That was it. We lost it.
I think essentially, Barry, back in those days where you could... or even now, we could put a little money into it, you would want to be there to keep an eye on whoever was running it for you if you, in fact, did not want to be there yourself. And the magic of New York, as opposed to living in some small town or whatever, precludes that. But I think probably not trusting whoever was going to run it for you when you couldn't have a first-hand...
Well, do you know how many radio people have bought radio stations? One guy I can think of particularly used to be a big man in New York who have done very badly, lost fortunes.
Well, that's it. You only hear success stories, but there's a lot of people... It's one thing to be able to get on the air and so on, but the business side of it... Also, don't you think we're all programmed to kind of come in and do our show and leave?
Exactly.
You know, if we were owners, it would be a thing. You're there all day, all night.
You have to be.
Weekend,
sure.
You know.
Forget it.
It's like being the owner of a restaurant. If you don't watch the register, they kid you.
Sure.
Right. That's right.
You know, the guy goes out the back door with two turkeys in his pocket. No joke.
No, that's right.
Having worked around saloons a little bit, one bartender can put you out of business.
Fellas, tell me how you guys feel about this. I have often been asked, why didn't you get into another aspect of the business, management, ownership, what have you? And my feeling was, all I ever cared about broadcasting was the microphone.
Yeah,
I never wanted to be in sales or any kind of an executive capacity, because I find most of the executives in broadcasting incompetent. I really feel that way about it. I think they don't know the business they're in, for the most part.
There are three in the control room who just fainted.
Well, that's the way I feel about it. And Joe mentioned something very early on. Guys who tend to be in positions of power usually come out of sales. They're not creative people. They're not program people. And these are the people who tend to wind up as your bosses. And I couldn't deal with that.
You know, I find that changing. I
hope so.
More creative people are, in fact, getting into management now. And I know it's my experience over at WYNY. We have some people directly from broadcasting and from programming who are running things, and I couldn't be happier about that. But by the same token, they have a great understanding of marketing and of sales, too, and an appreciation for it. You have to have the cooperation between the two. I must also say that it's in my experience that the salespeople over my way have an appreciation for programming.
So well, you're lucky. You're lucky.
That's right.
The point is that in radio or television, it seems to me that the selling and the programming must, in other words, it takes a clever boss to see to it that they don't interfere with each other.
Oh, that's right.
So that the salespeople, there are some salespeople who know programming. Most of them don't.
Yeah.
And if they get involved in programming, even if the programming people aren't all that great, you're going to run into trouble. It's going to be a bad scene, let's face it. But if you have a bright guy who knows, that can keep the salespeople happy and keep the program people happy, then you can have a good
terrific. Well, Jack and I work at CBS FM, and our boss is our program director, but he does an air show, which is great. He knows. You know, he does a regular air show.
Well, that's true of a lot of stations now. That's true of a lot of stations.
You know, you mentioned Ruth Meyer earlier. We all know Ruth, and I think she's a very savvy woman. I think that one of the biggest things that's happened in broadcasting is the full-fledged entrance of women into broadcasting.
It
made an enormous difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
An enormous difference. I meant to talk about engineering.
I was going to say.
Every aspect
of it. Programming.
Well, Ruth was really ahead of her time, Barry, and in fact, I think it frightened a lot of men.
Ruth should have been the Jane Pfeiffer of her period. No question about
really.
It.
Ruth didn't scare us, though.
No.
We used to let Ruth be the boss. She was absolutely brilliant, and we often said, you know, this woman ought to be paid $100,000 of 1955 money, you know, just to be around to keep everybody up and keep everybody laughing and the whole thing. And a more creative person,
Nobody ever said the concepts
on both the AM and the FM networks for NBC.
Very savvy woman.
Which is getting to be a very large business.
Nobody ever resented the fact that she was a woman. I don't think anybody thought along those lines. She was just creative as hell.
No,
and that's all that really mattered.
I always looked upon her as one of the good guys. I really
did.
She was one of the group.
Right, really.
And you never got the feeling, and as a very attractive woman, never got the feeling that she was using that, you know, using feminine wiles. She was very hard-headed, tough, and knew her business, and that's what you respected.
And never took her eye off the ball, ever. The only thing she was ever interested in was keep the style of the consistency up and keep the ratings up. If something didn't contribute to that, then it was no good.
Do you believe the ratings?
Well,
it depends. Not any one rating.
In those days, the ratings were, I think, more accurate than they are now. Now you've got so many different crazy ratings with the demographics, left-handed 12-year-olds.
Well, the audience is so fragmented.
Yeah, but if you put three or four ratings together and they show a trend, then you have to believe that, you know, the figures may not be exactly right, but the trend is there.
Nobody dominates radio the way we did. Between 62 and 68, and then later ABC, nobody today dominates radio the way we did. What's a good rating today?
We were talking 15.
Sure. Yeah. And what about, and going way, way, way back to Martin Block, or High Lit in Philadelphia when they had 50s.
Yes.
But that's what's happened. The audiences have become more and more fragmented. There's been more and more radio stations, inevitably.
Well, there was an excitement then. Remember, would get a Beatles record and put it on the air first. You know?
Absolutely.
Well, what we did, actually, literally, Barry, we had a fellow by the name of Joe Bogart, who was our music director. Ruth said, get on an airplane and fly to London. And he would literally fly to London and get something out of a Beatles recording session, which may not be released until two or three albums down the line, and we'd be playing it, and we'd be driving WABC and all the radio stations in America crazy. Where in the hell did you get a hold of that? And it would be the Beatles single, like two or three singles down the line.
But the interesting part of that, Barry, was that, you know, if you know anything about England, I know you do, in England, to this day, the record company decides when a record will be released. And this is sacrosanct. If they say the record will be released on October the 12th, no one plays it before that. BBC or the commercial stations or the continent.
Except we
didn't know about this, see? So we used to play them. And EMI would tell Capital, their American branch, to tell WMCA to stop doing that. It is not nice. And we would say, okay, and they would steal the next record. This one, how many? ABC got one, we got about 20.
They got one because they had the television show.
I think what you're telling me is...
And finally they gave up.
What you're telling me is that now it's become a very formalized business.
Yeah. Well, what we're telling you is that we were street fighters, and you will never, ever see anything like it again because it's more formulated nowadays. I think what you do have is the steadiness of format which prevailed in the 70s with a little bit of the self-indulgence which we had in the 60s, and that's why we're all morning men, because they allow some personality to happen in the mornings on radio stations nowadays.
Right, right. They found from experience that the format doesn't work as well in the morning as it does the rest of the day.
That's essentially correct. The same was true at night. I always got the feeling that nobody was listening at night. Nobody management-wise was listening at night. And you had your thing, you know, you could do your thing.
Well, if any of us had an idea, Barry, you know, if you had an idea for your show or the station as a whole, and it was always everybody contributing, we would say, hey, how about this? And we'd say, yeah, and we put it on the air.
Right.
Now it seems everything has to be cleared from the legal department, you know,
remember the
wherever
time,
you are.
Remember the time, fellas, we did the picnic out on Long Island?
Yeah, that
almost
was just
all
tremendous.
Went to prison, remember?
Let me hear. Beatle broadcast.
We hit a picnic.
And you could come if you could find it.
If you could find the picnic.
And we tied up traffic on Jericho Turnpike for 35 miles.
That's right. And the police loved us.
We would do clues on the air, you know, and people would listen, and it was amazing. We did that, a couple of days?
We started on Thursday. The picnic was on Sunday, and by about 6:30 Sunday morning, the people who had been following it knew where it was.
Yeah, there were
a couple of state parks that had signs
that said, "This ain't it."
And we had, I don't know, what was it?
50,000
people. The Pepsi people and the Nathan's people or whatever.
No, we had a show out there.
Bobby Vinton.
Jay and the Americans.
Jay and the Americans,
right?
Bobby Vinton, and that.
The Demotrons.
And the Demotrons.
I ran into one of them the other day. What's happened to that?
He's a senior VP now.
What's happened to that excitement?
Well, it isn't there anymore. No. A lot of stations don't believe in going out and meeting the people. We did so many record ops. I mean, as
St. Michael's
we said before,
once a month.
St. Michael's in Brooklyn, Staten Island, Long Island, Jersey. And it was a great way to meet people. And you would go out and, we still got that, happy to say. Radio is a thing where I've always been amazed and very flattered that when people will meet any of us or anybody in our business, they kind of feel like they know you.
Right.
It's not Mr. Harrison or Mr. Strector.
Right.
Harry, Dan, tremendous. And you certainly get it all the time. It's very flattering, and I never take that for granted. But no, the past few years, although now it's coming back somewhat. I did we had a CBS FM day at Belmont Park, and it was kind of fun to have Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Danny and the Juniors.
There?
Yeah,
oh,
and Danny and the Juniors, and it was fun. Yeah. We hadn't done this for so long, you know, and it brought back memories of all those hops. Yeah. We used to say Jack Spector, he did more than any. We used to call him the human hop.
Yeah, the human hop.
They had a doll. Barry at that time. The Jack Spector doll, you wind it up and it'll do a record.
I've had three cab drivers in the last 24 hours mention to me that today the good guys were going to be on the
air. Have you been plugging it like
No. I mean, just kind of osmosis.
Really?
Three cab drivers have mentioned to me that today at noon we were going to have the good guys.
Oh, that's
so
true.
Out there, you know, there's...
Hello, cabbies. How are the tips?
Hey, listen, the cabs made a lot of loot off us, too, because we had... Remember when we used to give the cab drivers money if they had the station on?
Got in the cab.
If you got a cab, MCA was on, he got a...
Guy retired on that,
silver dollar, wasn't it?
Maury Schwartz in Brooklyn.
The same guy won every
all
time.
All the time.
You know, you asked something earlier. Why didn't we all get into these various things? The four guys sitting here, and I feel the same way about Mitch, and the other guys who work with us, too. We all had sales and marketing savvy in addition to programming savvy. We used to sit around in a room like this and talk about ideas, and if we all felt strongly enough about something, it actually was affected. Management affected it because, along with a certain amount of contempt which they had for us, they also respected our on-air savvy. Yeah.
It was kind of contemptible, savvy.
I am talking with Dan Daniel, Harry Harrison, Joe O'Brien, Jack Spector. It's the Good Guy Reunion. And we're going to take some calls from you, that legion of listeners out there, with brushes, pots of tar, small grenades. You'll get a chance to talk to your favorites in a couple of moments.